But right now, I'm very happy to welcome to our program Patrick Woodall. He is a research director and senior policy advocate with the group Food and Water Watch. Patrick, it's great to have you on the program tonight. Thanks for joining us.
It's great to be here. Thank you.
So just a word as we begin here. Tell our listeners about the work that you do over at Food and Water Watch.
Food and Water Watch is a national consumer group that works to make sure that the food and water we consume are sustainably produced and accessible to everyone. So that covers a wide range of things on food safety, water privatization, on fracking, and on globalization and trade.
Thanks for that, Patrick. So we invite you here to talk about the Trans-Pacific Partnership, a proposed free trade agreement with dozens of nations that border the Pacific Rim. And I wonder if you would sort of give us the short thumbnail sketch of what TPP, as it's known, Trans-Pacific Partnership, what it is and its relationship with NAFTA, the North American Free Trade Agreement, which probably many more of our listeners are familiar with.
Sure. I mean, TPP is basically NAFTA on steroids. It's 12 nations, as you said, around the Pacific Rim, Canada, the U.S., Mexico, Peru, Chile, New Zealand, Australia, Brunei, Malaysia, Singapore, Vietnam, and Japan. And it basically expands the NAFTA model throughout the Pacific Rim and carries some of the worst traits of NAFTA to a much broader audience. Especially concerning is actually some of the investment provisions, which we'll talk about in a second, but also that it is a joining agreement. That is, in the future, other countries, including maybe China, India, the Philippines, Indonesia, could plug right into this agreement. And so although we're negotiating it now with these 12 countries, other countries could come in that we're really not even anticipating.
So before we get into some of this information revealed in a leak of one of the chapters, the very secretive negotiations in the chapters here, tell us about the timeline. One of the initial moves that will have to be approved by Congress is something called Fast Track, which allows this Trans-Pacific Partnership trade agreement to go before a vote in Congress, but with the members of Congress unable to tack on any amendments. And as the name implies, Fast Track, there's not going to be a lot of debate, and as I said, no real opportunity for amendments to make it more palatable for some. So tell us about Fast Track and when that's liable to occur.
So Fast Track is a legislative process by which trade deals are considered, and it is literally a Nixonian deal. This was created by Nixon to accelerate the congressional consideration and keep congressional meddling from Nixon's trade negotiations. Since Nixon, every president has sought Fast Track, but not all of them have gotten it. And the president is currently asking for Fast Track, and with the support of Republican leadership and big business, we're expecting that Fast Track could be introduced in Congress as soon as the week of April 13th. And it's afoot. The game is on now. I mean, as you said, it pretty much abrogates congressional authority and constitutional authority over setting the terms of commercial agreements with foreign nations and hands it over to the White House, and not just this White House, but the next White House. And basically, they get to choose who we are partnering with. They get to choose the terms of the deal. Currently, they've been negotiating the TPP for, you know, more than 5 years, basically in secret. Nobody has seen the text hardly at all. Even members of Congress have to go through a ridiculous process to look at the trade deal that they're allegedly going to vote on. And it's accelerated. They can only have 20 hours of debate. They have to consider it within, I think, 90 days of when the trade deal is introduced, and they are unable to offer any amendments on anything. So there's really just removes Congress except for an up or down, yes or no, take it or leave it kind of vote. And this really is the worst possible way to consider a trade deal that we can't even see. So the American public is going to be forced to, according to the people who are promoting this, kind of accept Fast Track and then accept the TPP on face value.
One of the recent developments that's fueling the debate both on Fast Track and the larger issue of whether or not to approve the Trans-Pacific Partnership. Was the leak of a TPP secret investment chapter that was published by WikiLeaks and the New York Times. Tell us about the importance of this chapter, what it says, and the secrecy surrounding it.
Sure. The investment chapter is a vitally important portion of the trade deal. There are 24 chapters that cover all sorts of things, food safety, environmental regulations, and a host of other things. But the investment chapter is really the point of the spear for this kind of corporate-oriented trade agenda. It includes protections that allow companies to challenge state, federal, and even local laws that they claim have unfairly expropriated their anticipated profits. And this is kind of a huge new expansion of power for these companies, enabling them to kind of challenge as trade barriers for financial damages, very common sense public health, environmental, and consumer protections that we hold dear, that the U.S. public has fought for years to get into place, including some of the things that you're going to talk with later guests about, all of which a company could claim would be an expropriation of profits. This allows companies to do two things. One, they have a powerful weapon to prevent democracy in action by being able to sue for damages, and two, that has a tremendous chilling effect on the kind of laboratory of democracy that we see all across the country at the state houses and at the city councils and in county and municipal government all over the country, where they're taking up issues that are important to their constituents and citizenry to protect them from kind of unnecessary abuses at the hands of some of these big businesses when the Congress is totally gridlocked. So it has a very chilling effect on this democracy in action that is terrible, basically. And many of the things, the kind of issues like states taking up microbeads, as you'll be talking about later, efforts to ban or have moratoriums on fracking for natural gas, efforts to label GMO foods, all these things are liable to be challenged by foreign companies as for damages as barriers to trade.
One thing that stunned me in reading a summary of this chapter is that even after this proposed Trans-Pacific Partnership came into effect, that this investment chapter would remain secret for four more years, which certainly puts this whole document in suspicion immediately. Tell us about the secrecy here.
So this is, of course, the most hyper-secret of the secrecy surrounding the TPP. The chapter contains a provision that would prevent the text from being shared even with the public until 4 years after the trade deal was either approved or had been rejected by the national governments, and basically keep this secret giveaway to big business on ice. So that the kind of people that are really negotiating the deal, you know, in the U.S. there are 600 corporate trade advisors that are helping the U.S. trade representative negotiate the terms of the TPP with the other countries. Now, regular citizens like you and I are not privy to this information. Even the members of Congress are having difficulty accessing it. And on this chapter, we wouldn't even be able to see it if, say, for WikiLeaks, we wouldn't see it for 4 years after the trade deal was either nixed by the Congress or approved.
Well, what does that say about democracy, given the fact that this investment chapter allows corporations to sue local, state, and federal governments across the globe if their laws and regulations would somehow impinge on their profit-making ability? It really undermines almost every law and regulation that citizens vote for in a democracy.
That's absolutely right. And so this is a kind of change, and a big change. These provisions exist in NAFTA, and they exist in a handful of other, most of the U.S. free trade agreements have these investor-to-state provisions in them that allow foreign companies to sue to capture their indirectly expropriated profits. And this really is an expansion of the idea of the investment protections. They were initially designed for things like right-of-ways and eminent domain. So, or if Mexico seized the petroleum assets of an oil company, as they did in the 30s to form Pemex, then without compensation, then there'd be a provision for them to recoup their real assets. But this is something totally different. It's an expansion of that idea, which allows them to seek a claim for regulations that impinge on future profits. So if you are a company that is currently polluting legally under the law, and we pass a law to halt that pollution, well, you could sue, because if you're a foreign company, because you anticipated profiting and earning revenue from not having to deal with that pollution. The same would be true if we pass laws to protect against certain financial frauds, which are not currently illegal now. Any of those actions to protect consumers, protect the environment, protect public health could be viewed as infringing on profits. And some of the cases that have gone on so far are very aggressive in this case. Philip Morris is suing Australia's plain packaging law on tobacco as infringing on their profits because they aren't going to be able to advertise as aggressively as they would like. So very important public health laws are at stake. A fracking company, a natural gas company, is suing the province of Quebec in Canada for having a moratorium on fracking to examine its effect on the St. Lawrence River. This is a very big deal. It's important for them to take that into consideration. But there have been 250 local communities, and even the state of New York, have banned or put a moratorium on fracking for natural gas within their boundaries, which would open up a floodgate of potential litigants who could challenge these bans or moratoria as expropriating their profits and demand financial penalties.
We're speaking with Patrick Woodall. He's a research director and senior policy advocate with the group Food and Water Watch, and we'll give their web address at the conclusion of our conversation tonight. Patrick, with the ability that the proposed Trans-Pacific Partnership Free Trade Agreement offers corporations to sue local, state, and federal governments around the world if their profits are somehow impinged upon, what is the mechanism by which their case would be judged? Who would be making the determination whether New York State, for instance, has to pay up if a natural gas company is prohibited from fracking?
They are adjudicated by investment tribunals. One is housed at the World Bank, and one is housed at the United Nations. And they are three panel judges, typically from a slate of trade attorneys. So they're all kind of in the business of the corporate free trade attorneys. So they are very sympathetic to the claims of the investors. So you have these kind of secret tribunals that are hosted at the World Bank or the United Nations, judging the effect of a state, local, or federal law. It's important to remember that these cases are brought by the foreign company against the U.S., basically, for failing to live up to the terms of the trade deal, but they would be targeting potentially state or local laws. So even in the Canada case, the Quebec case I just mentioned, it is actually Lone Pine versus Canada. So it really does put a crimp on local government's ability to do stuff that they think is very important to protect their citizens.
Now, how does this affect U.S.-based corporations if we're talking about U.S. laws, you know, being on the chopping block?
Well, obviously, U.S. companies could challenge foreign laws, and this has already happened in some very important toxic waste cases in Mexico and some other environmental cases in Canada under NAFTA. So far, there have been U.S. deals like NAFTA and the other free trade agreements, there have been $3.6 billion in damages awarded under these cases. The U.S. has not lost a case yet, but it's important to remember that U.S. subsidiaries overseas could conceivably use this mechanism to challenge U.S. law, although that has not happened yet. And obviously, what is that? Up to till now, really the only country with major investments inside the U.S. has been Canada. But this deal adds New Zealand and Japan and Australia and, and Singapore, all of whom could actually bring new cases where they couldn't before.
Well, Patrick, before we have to say goodnight, tell our listeners about the coalition that's developed to oppose Fast Track and the Trans-Pacific Partnership. What are they doing to gear up for the Fast Track battle in Congress, which will be the first stop along the way if the Trans-Pacific Partnership is going to get an up or down vote later on?
So there's an incredibly broad-based national coalition that is already fighting Fast Track, and there's stuff people can do locally. Representative Hines is undecided on Fast Track, right, your very own representative, and he needs to hear that his constituents oppose this. But it is a coalition of labor, consumer, environmental, human rights, public health, international development, family, farm, and faith-based groups across the country and in all the other TPP countries that are concerned that this trade deal puts corporate interests ahead of the public interest. So it's incredibly broad-based. Right now there is tremendous opposition. I mean, the polling on global trade deals is really incredibly poor, and the reason is because Americans know that these trade deals have not offered the benefits that have been promised. We've lost millions of manufacturing wage jobs to trade deals like NAFTA, our trade deal with China. So it has a real impact on people's lives. We're concerned about, you know, kind of common sense kitchen table issues where we import more food. We have the same number of import inspectors, and it really means that we're exposing people to potentially greater risks even at the supermarket. So these are the kind of common sense day-to-day things that really affect people. They have a visceral reaction to this, and I think the national coalition on this is working tremendously hard to beat Fast Track, because if we can beat Fast Track, it'll be much harder to kind of cram this bad deal, this bad TPP, down the Congress's throat.
Now, just a quick sort of end note here. We have President Obama, a Democrat, for this trade deal. Republican leadership is also in favor of it, but there are a lot of progressive Democrats as well as some Tea Party Republicans that oppose it for different reasons. But what about a left-right coalition? You think there's a chance that the Fast Track will be defeated by that coalition?
I think there's a very good chance that Fast Track could be defeated, but it's going to really require everyone to contact their member of Congress. The reason is because the pressure to pass this is intense. The White House has a special, basically, war room that they're gearing up, and big business is putting a full-court press on, and Republican leadership is pushing on it. The people that are standing up to block Fast Track are really ordinary citizens who are talking to their members of Congress, civil society across the political spectrum that's concerned about this. It is a kind of left and right coming together, recognizing for basically the same reason, which is this is a secret, undemocratic process that puts the special interests ahead of the public, and that kind of thing really resonates all over the political spectrum. It's the kind of place where Ralph Nader meets Pat Buchanan.
Well, I would just say, from the point of view of someone who opposes this, and speaking for myself, I would just say this is an incredible betrayal, especially by, you know, all those voters who put President Obama in office twice. I really think this it goes contrary to everything he said he stood for in both his re-election, his initial election and re-election campaigns. But the press coverage of this has also been pretty poor, and you might want to say a quick note about that before we give your website so people can learn more about this. And I know there's some other groups working on it. There's websites you might want to give as well.
Sure. I mean, obviously, we're always concerned about the kind of attention to really important progressive issues that we too often do not see in mainstream newspapers. I think as this fight really heats up, there'll be more coverage of it. Last week, the New York Times' coverage of this investment chapter was fantastic, and much needed attention in this front. Obviously, lots and lots of folks are working on this. Our website is foodandwaterwatch.org. But lots of groups are working on this across the country. Sierra Club at sierraclub.org, Public Citizen at citizen.org. All are doing great, fantastic work on this.
Is there a website called stoptpp.org? Is that one that I got right? Or
there is a website called stoptpp.org, and I think there's a lot of attention to this out there from civil society of all over the place. So, I mean, there are groups that are concerned about internet freedom that I think are the ones that are doing stoptpp.org, and it's got tons of great resources and links on it as well.
Well, Patrick, thanks for making time to talk with us about Trans-Pacific Partnership and the fight against it and this secret chapter now revealed. Appreciate the time you spent. Thank you, Patrick.
Thank you very much. It's been great being here.
Okay, thanks. Bye-bye. That's Patrick Woodall. He's Research Director and Senior Policy Advocate with the group Food and Water Watch, talking about the soon-to-be-voted-on fast track as the initial kind of skirmish on the Trans-Pacific Partnership Free Trade Agreement.